Today on Renewing Your Mind, a beloved member of the early church dies, and in the midst of the weeping and grief of her friends, the Apostle Peter gets on his knees.
And he starts to pray. And then we are told by Luke that he looks over at the body. He looks at the corpse in his presence and begins to talk to it. And he says, "Tabitha, arise."
Welcome to this Lord's Day edition of Renewing Your Mind. I'm Lee Webb. We're joining Dr. R.C. Sproul as he continues his sermon series in the book of Acts. We've been encouraged as Dr. Sproul reminds us of the work of the Holy Spirit in the early church. Over the past couple of weeks, we've studied Paul's Damascus Road conversion and the dramatic change that happened in his life. This week, though, we leave Paul for a while to concentrate on the Apostle Peter in Acts chapter 9. Let's join Dr. Sproul from the pulpit of St. Andrew's Chapel in Sanford, Florida.
Let's turn our attention back now to the scriptures. I'll be reading this morning from the book of Acts, verse 32 through 43. Now it came to pass, as Peter went through all parts of the country, that he also came down to the saints who dwell in Lydda. And there he found a certain man named Aeneas, who had been bedridden 8 years and was paralyzed. And Peter said to him, "Aeneas, Jesus the Christ heals you. Arise and make your bed." And then he arose immediately. So all who dwelt at Lydda and Sharon saw him and turned to the Lord. Now, Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. And this woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. But it happened in those days that she became sick and died. And when they had washed her, they laid her in an upper room. And since Lydda was near Joppa and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent two men to him, imploring him not to delay in coming to them. And then Peter arose and went with them. And when he had come, they brought him to the upper room. And all the widows stood by him weeping, showing the tunics and garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. But Peter put them all out and knelt down and prayed. And turning to the body, he said, "Tabitha, arise." And she opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up. Then he gave her his hand and lifted her up. And when he had called the saints and widows, he presented her alive. And it became known throughout all Joppa, and many believed on the Lord. And so it was, he stayed many days in Joppa with Simon, a tanner. He has ears to hear the word of God. Let him hear it. We know that in the first century Christian community, that the church in Jerusalem was led chiefly by the apostle Peter. He became preeminently the apostle to the Jews, while Paul had been set aside to be the apostle to the Gentiles. Now, obviously, Peter also had ministry to Gentiles, and Paul also had ministry to Jews, but the difference was the chief emphasis of each was different. And we know that Paul went on many missionary journeys to the Gentile nations that we'll be looking at, God willing, in the days ahead. But today's text opens with the record of Peter going all about the nation and the countryside of Israel, visiting the villages where the gospel had been taken outside of Jerusalem, and, as it were, ministering to these little congregations that were scattered all throughout the land. And Luke tells us that Peter now is making his way back towards Jerusalem, heading south, and he comes to this village of Lydda, which was the New Testament name for the Old Testament town of Lod. And it was significant for its location being about halfway between Jerusalem and the Mediterranean Sea, where the Jews had their chief seaport at Joppa. You can look at it in your map. If you have a Bible with you, you can look at the map in the back of the Bible to see where it was situated. If you're numbered among the elect, all you have to do is look at the bottom of the text page of the New Geneva Bible or the Reformation Study Bible, and you'll have a little insert there that shows you where this town was. It was just a few miles from Emmaus, where the disciples had walked from Jerusalem after the resurrection to the village of Emmaus, and a little bit south of Arimathea, from which Joseph had come. And so Peter comes to this place, and he found a certain man named Aeneas, and we are told he had been bedridden for 8 years and was paralyzed. And the man was paralyzed to such a degree that he wasn't able to walk, he wasn't able to move about, he was confined to his bed for 8 years. And as Jesus had healed a similar paralytic during his earthly ministry, now Peter looks at this man with compassion, and listen, please, to what he says to this paralyzed man. He said to him, "Aeneas, Jesus the Christ heals you." Or it could be translated, "is healing you," that is, at that moment. "Arise and make your bed." I find that last portion somewhat significant. He doesn't just tell the man to get up from his bed, but he said, "As soon as you get up out of your bed, I want you to make your bed." Sounds like my mother, although it didn't work. I had an aunt that lived with us, and every morning after I got up, she made my bed. And when my aunt moved away, my grandmother moved in, and she continued to spoil me and made my bed. And the only time in my life I ever made my bed was when I was in college. But after I got married, my wife took care of that. And to this day, I still don't make my bed. You know, I've often thought it's sort of a useless thing anyway. I mean, you go to bed at night, you get up, you're going to go back into the bed again later on in the day. Why go to all the muss and fuss to tidy it up and so on? But being how people are, creatures of organization, most people get their bed made. But this man wasn't able to make his bed for 8 years. I'm sure there were occasions when his friends or his family would come and turn him on this mat in which he lay and change the linens around him while he was there in this paralyzed state. But now Peter says, "Get up, and it's time to make your bed." Because it's not something that you're going to have to be lying in 24 hours a day ever again. Why? He said, "Because Jesus the Christ is healing you." Now, there's another way we could translate that sentence. It would be this: Jesus the Christ, at this moment, Aeneas, is making you whole. Let me say to you for a moment this morning that if you are a Christian, as the bumper sticker reads that we've all seen, God is not finished with you yet. In every person's life who is sitting here this morning or standing, there remains deficiencies. Sanctification is a whole lifelong process that is never completed until our entrance into heaven. Until then, we are glorified and freed from sin altogether. In the meantime, we are called to move from infancy in our spiritual journey towards adulthood, to grow up into the fullness of the image of Christ and be more and more each day conformed to Him. Because right now, for the Christian, Jesus is making us whole. But no one of us is whole yet. But we will be someday. That's the Christian hope. And that's what Peter communicated. Peter didn't take any credit for this. Peter didn't say, "In my name, get up off your mat and walk." No, he said, "Get up, Aeneas. Jesus, the Christ, is making you whole. Make your bed." That happens in this little village of Lydda where centuries later, Richard the Lionhearted, made famous by the legend of Robin Hood, when he went on his crusade to the Holy Land, stopped and dwelt in this city for some time and even built a church in honor of St. George, the ruins of which remain even to our day. Well, the news of this man's healing spread throughout the region. And then we read next that at Joppa on the seacoast, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha. There was a disciple there named Tabitha. There was a lady there whose name was Tabitha, Tabitha. You're in the Bible. Did you know that? Your brother is too, Uriah. But Tabitha we meet now, whose Aramaic name was Tabitha and her Greek name was Dorcas. Listen to this description of this woman. How would you like to have this for an epitaph? The woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. But it happened in those days that she became sick and died. So when they had washed her, they laid her in an upper room. And since Lydda was near Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent two men to him, imploring him not to delay in coming to them. And Peter arose and went with them. And when he had come, they brought him to the upper room. And all the widows stood by him weeping, showing the tunics and garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. Let me get the picture. Peter is summoned, just as his Lord had been summoned to Bethany recently on the occasion of the death of Lazarus, his friend. And we have John's account how Jesus ventured then to Bethany and raised Lazarus from the dead. So now the alarm is sent to Peter, and he comes the 10 miles or so to see about this woman who had died. And when he gets there, there is this crowd of people. And the crowd is made up mostly of widows. And we learn now what Luke meant when he said that this woman was given to charity and filled with good works. What she had done was made garments constantly of tunics and blouses and other forms of clothing to distribute to the widows. And so now, to honor her in her death, the widows of the community came to the home where she had been laid out for her funeral viewing, as it were. And they brought with them the garments that Tabitha had sewn for them. We don't want to miss this, because remember what Jesus' brother James said, that the essence of true religion is the care of widows and orphans. And there is a special compassion from Jesus towards those who suffer the loss of their mate, particularly the women who lose their husbands. And we are to give special concern to minister to those people. And here, this woman, Tabitha, had done just that. And so now Peter sees all these women gathered around, and they're weeping and wailing because of this woman's death. And he excuses himself from them, and he says to them, please leave. He wants to go into the room and be alone with the corpse of Dorcas or Tabitha. Interestingly enough to me, the name Tabitha meant gazelle or antelope. And when you think of a gazelle, you think of an animal that's graceful, that moves with rapidity and ease. But now this gazelle is dead and inert and lying in view on this bed. Peter, we are told, after he put the women outside, he went into the room and he knelt down and he prayed. It doesn't say he did that with Aeneas. It's one thing to heal somebody that's been paralyzed for 8 years. That's hard enough. It's another to raise somebody from the dead. This time, Peter gets on his knees and he starts to pray earnestly. And then we're told by Luke that he looks over at the body. He looks at the corpse in his presence and begins to talk to it. And he says, Tabitha. Arise. And Peter's staring at this corpse. And the body opens her eyes. The eyelids that had been closed in death are now opened in life. And the first thing Tabitha sees when she opens her eyes is Peter, who is there. And after she opens her eyes and sees the apostle, she sits up in bed. Now listen to what Peter does. Then he gave her his hand and lifted her up. And we called the saints and the widows. He presented her alive. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we can misunderstand the idiom that's here. It's not that she's sitting up and she's strong enough now in her resurrection to be half alive and needs the help of Peter to lift her up off the bed. No, 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 no. For Peter, this was an act of chivalry, where this woman, who was so well known for her good works and for her charity and kindness, and whom everybody loved and was now alive again, Peter reaches out his hand, says, let me take your hand, and helps her to get up and escorts her to the door, opens the door, and presents her alive to her friends. I mean, what would you have given to have been in that group and see that door open and watch Peter standing there holding the hand of this woman who is now vibrant and alive with her eyes wide open. Well, the story of that spread all around the area, just as the healing of Aeneas. And we're told then that Peter stayed there many days. Many believed in the Lord. And he stayed in Joppa with Simon, a tanner, whom we'll mention more about, God willing, next week. This is the Jesus that we're here to adore, to worship. This is the Jesus who sets his table before you. This is the Christ who is making you whole. And one of the means by which he makes us whole is by feeding us and strengthening us and healing us through his word and through the sacrament. And he is here. Sometimes when we read these stories and we think about all the years that separate us from apostolic days, we think, oh, if only he were here now. But he is here. And he's here to feed you himself.
I hope you've been encouraged by Dr. R.C. Sproul's message from the book of Acts. You're listening to Renewing Your Mind, and we're studying Acts here on the Sunday edition of our program. Verse 42 from our study today summarizes much of what we've seen in Acts so far. And it became known throughout all Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. You know, this book is full of stories of conversion, people believing in Jesus Christ. But what does that mean? Is it intellectual knowledge, or does it go deeper? Dr. Sproul has written a very helpful booklet titled, What Does It Mean to Be Born Again? In it, he explains the necessity of new birth. Then he goes on to show what the new birth is and how it occurs. For your gift of any amount today, we will send you two copies of this booklet, one for you and one for a family member or friend. You can call us at 800-435-4343, or you can give your gift online at renewingyourmind.org. This booklet is part of our Crucial Questions series, more than two dozen titles answering common questions about the Christian faith. Some of the titles include, Who is Jesus? What is faith? And Can I Be Sure I'm Saved? This series will provide you with helpful answers to many of the questions that we commonly hear. You can explore all of the titles on Ligonier's website, and for your gift of any amount today, we will send you two copies of What Does It Mean to Be Born Again? Our number again is 800-435-4343, and our web address is renewingyourmind.org. Well, you often hear us say that Ligonier Ministries does not seek to replace the church, but to come alongside her and undergird her. Our desire is to help Christians mature in their faith and to be faithful members of their local churches. And part of that means that we need to come alongside our pastors and to help them and be supportive of them as they preach the gospel week in and week out. Dr. Sproul, what advice would you give members of local churches to help build up their pastors?
That's a real passion for mine. I've taught for many years in the Doctor of Ministry program in various seminaries. And in that program, you had to be a pastor for a minimum of 5 years before you could enroll in that program. I can remember one occasion where the dean of the program of Doctor of Ministry asked me, what do you want to teach this year? And I said, just pick a subject, doesn't matter, because basically what I'm going to be addressing is the crisis that ministers are having, just staying in the ministry. Because when the men got together and we would work and we would go work through the different doctrines of theology and all the rest, inevitably the discussion would come down to how discouraged they were feeling and how many, like 16,000 ministers leave the pastorate every year, some for moral reasons, but more I think for just being totally discouraged with the job that they have. And 20 years ago, you know, we started St. Andrew's, and I really got a real good taste of some what it means to be in the pulpit Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. But as far as I'm concerned, there's just no higher calling than that. And we shouldn't get stars in our eyes about going to a conference and hearing somebody that's particularly eloquent, but rather constantly being encouraging to our pastors to stay focused on the gospel, where the power of God is invested in the gospel, not in personality, not in methodology, not in program. It's in the scriptures and the power of the word, and that's what I would want to try to encourage the pastor to do.
And that's an encouragement to all of us who are members of a local church. Thank you, Dr. Sproul, for that. Well, next weekend, we will return to your verse-by-verse series through the book of Acts. As we left Peter today, he was staying in Joppa. Next week, some very important events will take place there, including a vision from God. So join us next Sunday for Renewing Your Mind.